Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Companhia Hering's first quarter 2020 earnings conference call. We would like to inform that all participants will be connected in listen-only mode during the company's remarks. After the company's presentation, we'll have a Q&A session when further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during the conference call, please request the help of an operator by pressing star zero. Before we move on, it's important to have in mind that forward-looking statements made during this conference call concerning the company's business outlook, financial and operating goals and forecasts are based on the management's expectations. Such expectations are highly dependent on internal market conditions and on the overall economic performance of the country and also of international markets, and therefore are subject to changes. Here with us today in São Paulo, we have Mr. Fabio Hering, the company's CEO, Mr. Rafael Bossolani, CFO and IRO, and Mr. Thiago Hering, COO. The management will make a brief introduction, and then will be available for questions and answers you may have. I'd like to turn the floor over now to Mr. Fabio Hering. Please, Mr. Hering, you may proceed. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to salute you all and welcome to this conference call to discuss first quarter results. It has been certainly a challenging period. We're going through a unique moment. No one could ever imagine, no human being could ever imagine we'd be going through such a period like of this, such as this health crisis affecting the whole world. Of course, this affects the lives of people first and foremost. It also affects the economy. It affects everyone and everything. Today's conference call will have a first part dedicated to a presentation. I will be making a brief overview, a brief opening, and then Rafael will take over to address our performance in the quarter with comments on the numbers. And then Thiago will also be participating in this presentation to bring more information about the first quarter and also about our future outlook. We have just started a cycle now with the start of the pandemic. So we're going through a very important decision-making cycle. We are revisiting decisions we made in the past. On the execution front, we had to react and to respond very fast. Course corrections have been made overnight so that we could adapt to this highly volatile scenario which all companies are going through, especially companies in our sector, in our industry. Without a doubt, it's not the highest hit, but one of the most severely hit with the crisis. We could never imagine we would have our stores closed for such a long period of time. And we also had to suspend our manufacturing operations. And the company, by mid-March, when the scenario was already quite serious, the company made the decision. We actually anticipated official measures in that respect, federal or state government. We anticipated those measures, and along with other retail chains, we decided to close our stores. So since March 19th, we've had all our own stores closed. And we recommended our franchisees do the same, and they did the same. Therefore, we came to a complete halt in terms of physical stores, with all our brands, Hering Basic, Shop, Hering Kids, Pook, and Disney Army, all of them were closed. All our brand stores were closed. After that, a few days later, the state governments decided on the closing of all retail activities and also recommended social distancing and social isolation. So the level of paralysis was quite extensive. And we decided to look at our people, of course, at the same time. We conducted a series of adaptations, just as other partners and other companies in our industry did the same, including work suspension. We had people start working from home. We suspended all business travels, face-to-face meetings, face-to-face events, with an eye at preserving everyone's health and well-being. That was the main focus early on, and it continues to be so. Our focus is on preserving health first and foremost. And in our case, this has a specific feature because our business model is very specific. We navigate in a very complex scenario. In production, for example, we have our own facilities. And we also have partners for some of the phases of production. And I'm referring to those hundreds of manufacturers who provide services to us for our different brands and who need our support, and that support was provided. Support in terms of proceed, in terms of managing their business, and also in how to manage their people in terms of protection or preserving their health. Now, on the retail front and on the distribution front, we have a very complex model, including franchisees and franchises, which are independent, but which are highly connected, highly tied to our company. And we also took the lead in reacting to the pandemic and trying to overcome or face all challenges presented by the coronavirus crisis. So I do believe that the company has managed through its people, through its actions, to respond very expeditiously, very efficiently in terms of protecting people, in terms of preserving the business. And to do that, we also counted on a great capital structure that the company has put together over time, which places us in a very comfortable position right now in terms of survival. Because from then on, from March on, we saw stores close. So the second quarter was particularly difficult. I'd like to take the opportunity also to comment on a few initiatives on the social front. On page number 6 of our presentation, we can see that. Some images concerning that, both in terms of clothing for health professionals, masks, which were distributed to communities, hospitals, and institutes. We also launched a special collection called With Love. All of that led to a high level of donation, and in terms of donations, in terms of costs, this is not value to market, but the original cost in terms of donations of about 1.4 million BRL so far in terms of donations, as you can see, slide number 6. Having said that, and before I turn it over to Rafael, I also like to reinforce the importance of this particular conference call. All conference calls are important, of course, but I am Sure, that this one is especially important because we are sharing with you clarifications not only about first quarter numbers, which was quite complex, of course, as you know, because of the impact we've suffered from the pandemic, but we also will be sharing information to inform the market about the second quarter, which is underway. And as you know, the second quarter will be extremely challenging because the revenue streams have halted. So with that, we intend to, during the presentation and then after that, with Rafael and Thiago, we'd like to convey information, important numbers, and we'll remain available for the Q&A session after that. Once again, reinforcing that this conference call is special, is very deep in terms of clarifying the market and how we look, how we see our industry, how we see the company at this moment, and what are the perspectives going forward, and also what we have managed to accomplish so far, especially for this very challenging second quarter. So thank you for now. And I'd like to turn over to Rafael. Please, Rafael, you have the floor. Carry on. Thank you, Fabio. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for participating, for being here today at our earnings call once again. I hope you all are and well and safe, and your families as well. When the first signs of the coronavirus impact emerged in Brazil in March, affecting our operations, we quickly implemented actions to preserve and strengthen the company's cash. And those numbers are summarized on slide number 8. The first step that we took was to act timely on the liquidity position, along with an intensification of our model of cost control and investments. Just to cite a few examples, we have delayed all payments of dividends and JCP. We renegotiated contracts, we renegotiated terms, we suspended all non-essential activities, we reduced the amount of purchases of raw materials and also finished products. We renegotiated, and this is an ongoing process, the occupation costs for the main shopping mall groups in Brazil. And we also adhered to the emergency program to preserve employment and salaries under provisional 956, and that allows us to reduce our payroll by 50% in April and May when we joined the program. It's important to reinforce that those measures will have an impact mainly in the second quarter. I'd like also to highlight that by the end of March and early April, we raised 200 million BRL to further reinforce our liquidity position and resource availability so that we could go through this period, this uncertainty period, in a more comfortable position without losing out on or missing out on opportunities. At the end of April, our cash position was at 590 million BRL, which is more than enough to keep the operation going in normal basis. Lastly, it's also important to mention that we have reviewed our collection campaign. We changed the schedule for the winter collection and for the collections to be launched in the second half of 2020. So we'll be emphasizing the local production matrix, and we reduced one of the collections for the second half there, which is the summer collection that has been reduced. So moving on to slide number nine now. Along with the actions to preserve cash that I just mentioned, I'd like to highlight a few initiatives to support our business network. We implemented a communication routine, which is quite frequent, with weekly calls where we help units implement contingency programs, renegotiating contracts, access to credit lines, other guidelines to reduce working days, renegotiate work contracts. We also created our own plan to help our franchisee network and multi-brand clients. We have extended that. We have reduced tax burdens for them, and we also readdressed all orders until we have all stores reopened again. Additionally, we experienced new modes of sales, and the social selling platform stands out in that respect, which allows for the payment of sales fee to employees, multi-brand stores, and franchisees for sales that are made through our websites. They work based on vouchers, which are handed out to those groups and the communities as well. So today, over 2,000 people working on that sales front. Another tool that we have used through which the sales might happen through the delivery system and through a drive-through or curbside pickup alternative for those stores which are closed. In all formats, we have made available tools and technology to activate offers, promotions, offering virtual catalogs, virtual modes of payment, payments that can be made either through a website or through cell phones. So moving to slide number 11, we'll be seeing some of the financial performance highlights. The company's gross revenue reached $320.8 million in the quarter, 26% when compared to the first quarter of last year. That can be explained mainly by the closure of our physical store network starting in the second half of March, where we will be concentrating the highest revenue income in the quarter. So given the scenario of stores closures, our selling supply for multi-brand clients was also interrupted. And part of the winter collection, which accounts to 40%, give or take, of our selling in the quarter, was eventually canceled. So it was a strong impact. It represented a strong impact on the final results. It's important to highlight the supply for the franchisees so that we can ensure the sustainability of the network and the right sizing of the stock levels vis-à-vis sales, which are now being made to the final consumers, the sell-out. So we have included some specific initiatives in terms of returns of merchandise from franchisee to the company. They have accepted our recommendations in terms of assortment late last year, but could not sell those products. So we eventually accepted part of that merchandise being returned. The main highlight in terms of revenue was the e-commerce channel. In the first quarter, web store sales grew 42.6%, and that accelerated throughout the quarter. We saw several improvements in the digital platform, which ensured an improvement in the experience of consumers navigating the website, and they converted into a higher flow of new users. We'll give more details about the e-commerce front on the last session when we talk about the future, when we call the new normal.
Now I'd like to skip to slide 13 to talk about gross profit, which has reached 109 million BRL, impacted by the lower volume of sales. Consequently, the gross margin of the quarter of 40%, it reflects minus points because of the downgrade of leverage our manufacturer percentage, as well as the level of sales, which had dropped as a consequence of the decrease of our regular collection sales. Slide 14, EBITDA, 11.4 million, essentially due to the low level of growth. I also have to highlight an increase in our provision for any sort of doubts regarding those titles that were due to date. We also have some efforts in decreasing our costs in our company, which will reflect results on the second quarter of the year. Next slide, 15. Cash flow. We see that the company, even though facing that scenario, we have reached 20 million of cash flow, and we implemented 46 million in comparison to the previous year due to a lower financial result. Slide 16, we closed the semester with a cash flow of 365 million. In April, we were able to capture over 8 million BRL, and we closed our month with a total cash of 522 million. Last, I'd like to highlight some of the events that took place during the closure of the first semester of the year. Once we decided to discontinue our co-brand PUC after assessing our brand portfolio, our strategy in positioning our brands in the segment of children and teenagers market. We decided to run one single brand to meet the requirements of this segment. After a number of surveys and in order to understand our consumers, we are working on a line of products to add to our current portfolio. Last May 19, we disclosed a gain of our legal lawsuit according ICMS in our calculation base for ICMS and COFINS. The number to be audited is around 200 million BRL, and we expect to account it during the results of our second quarter of the year 2020, which credit we may benefit for the next coming months. Now I'd like to take over to Thiago.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I wish you all the best, especially right now that we are facing a very unique time in our country and in the society as a whole. I would like to start my talk going back to slide 12, where I would like to go into details about our partners and our revenue during the first quarter 2020. That was a quite challenging quarter, I should say, and I also would like to introduce that topic, trying to understand effectively what was a consequence of COVID effects and also an agenda of lessons learned, where the whole team is totally aware and they are quite frustrated as well about what they managed to deliver during the first quarter. We were going through a very effective
rhythm and a good pace. But at the end of the fourth quarter, we had some challenges to face, and the same cycle of products and the liquidation of those bad products and some execution mistakes that we carried out during the fourth quarter that somehow has impacted our first quarter. Once we had a negative month in January, a slow recovery by February, and by the time we introduce a new cycle of products, a new collection, we are now capturing some sort of improvement, and we have something around 7% growth during the first week of March. Right after that, we were affected by the COVID, the pandemic, the stores locked down by the middle of March. It is a fact that we have been having 2 years not being very positive, but I replicate. We feel quite frustrated, and we are aware that much more should be done to improve our sales. Some transformations in our agenda should be speeded up to improve our production, our profits, to be able to reach the same levels of gains that we had last year. So now let's talk about our current position, the second semester. Let's share our outlook, what we expect to get, and let me highlight our e-commerce sales throughout digital channels. In April, we twofold our sales in comparison to the previous year, and so far we are threefolding sales in comparison to the previous year again. And that is happening thanks to a joint effort by different areas where we have to prioritize availability, cash and equivalents, and also to expand our operating capacity. This is a channel that in few months managed to threefold its performance, and we are pretty sure and positive that little by little we will take our production back to track, and we are highly confident that we'll be able to reach that expected level, even though we had established new channels, and now we see a new possibility to keep that current e-commerce penetration. As a main indicators, in addition to sales growth, it's also very timely to highlight that we increased our client baseline, where we reached 6% of new customers, and that has to do availability and to address these clients to this new channel. It's also important to consider conversion rates thanks to the availability and to the possibility to have e-commerce purchase. Our team is constantly improving themselves, and this is very clear in our scope. We had also improved considerably our delivery time, despite throughout the time we still faced some critical weeks, but we are trying to respond to our customers in a very fast manner with clarity, and we try to mitigate any sort of shortage in our services during the weeks. And I have to reinforce that our team is working very jointly and strongly to improve our performance. I also would like to highlight some additional initiatives that we added to our e-commerce, where we had increased our omnichannel, where we almost twofold that number, considering all social distancing, lockdown, and everything else, which was responsible to impact our transactions. We also increased our Super Express delivery within 24 hours. We can see an increase in our main lines, and we see that very well when we are calling that herring at home, and we have also amplified our digital presence via new tools. We have just released voucher sales, where we connected 2,000 new sellers throughout our multi-brand and franchisees, where we could activate our e-commerce, and we managed to keep sales in our micro community, the family-like type of sales. We are also leveraging a number of services such as personal shoppers to increase time that consumers stay in our website, and by that we can improve different basket selection per purchase. We have a new line of products, and we are also establishing different partnerships in the marketplace format with brands, which we believe that from a synergic standpoint, they will complement our comfort journey, which is a journey that Hering would like to lead. We are also improving our external marketplaces, and this is an agenda with lots of windows to be improved. And these are the main highlights for e-commerce. And I would like to reinforce that we are fully sure that we'll be able to keep that level of sales, and we'll be able to address those current agendas, all the specific aspects that I have just highlighted. Now let's skip to physical channels, where we have 203 open shops, as you can see on slide 17. That amounts 30% of our whole fleet. So with street shops in the countryside, interior cities, they are open with partial activity or maybe non-activity. And some good news to break is that week after week, we perceive an improvement in our performance. There is a gradual improvement in their performance, especially for those street side shops where we see more people walking by. Shopping centers, on the other hand, they face a greater challenge. But even those shops with greater performance, we can see that the main sales leverage is not exactly flow, but sales productivity, the type of average sales ticket. This is responsible to, that has been responsible to leverage our sales. In the next weeks and sales, we might see the reopening of the larger shopping centers, but still, let's understand that we can see some improvement in our sales. It's still quite slow, but at least our curve is growing a bit faster than before. And even for those stores which are still closed, and our goal is to keep an engaged network to guarantee our business and to sustain our business chain. And as Rafael's comments, where we have some contingency, we have to decrease our expenses, but in a very fast pace, we build up a number of new services which aims to digitalize all experiences, to overcome physical restrictions, and to guarantee even to those shops which are closed some sort of sales and client base activation, in addition to the voucher sales that I have just commented as part of our e-commerce initiatives. We are helping the network to define an operation called as Dark Kitchen, where we have closed stores but working as hubs, production hubs, where we have different distribution points of sales generated by the e-commerce, are also activating their regional consumers base throughout a WhatsApp tool, which the sector made available to all the network to relate all the operations into the delivery mode. And in the worst case scenario, we still see some shops that have reached 60% to 60% of their production, even though they are still operating under this shutdown mode. Our implementation has been widely communicated and conveyed to our network to better inform, guide, and mainly engage our network and to make them to understand in a very transparent and clear way that we are doing our best in terms of initiatives, actions, and about our next steps for the near coming future. Besides all of that, we have been developing, and thanks to some specific channels, those channels that have higher activities in those larger centers, and we have tested them under new projects and new pilots where some areas they will accept is basic supplies, respecting the brand integrity and total price control in the sellout segment. And in the next weeks, we might see new captured data that will help us to better understand all these formats. And then, after that post-pilot phase, we'll be able to consolidate our actions, to refine them, and later on deploy all of them with a hope to have some additional gains and benefits to the company without any sort of significant losses. Now, going more philosophical, or maybe try to share a rather holistic perspective, and as we outlook our strength and growth for the new wave, I guess we should start from a sustainable position, how to guarantee a sustainable performance. We have been doing our homework where we try to build up a systemic response to society, planet, and environment throughout our entrepreneurs' supply chain. And our company is fully clear about our role and what we have to do to our country from a sustainability perspective. And we are pretty sure that we still might see some reshaping, of this supply chain. Entrepreneur supply chain is a key aspect to understand and to help us in our future actions. There are different premises and hypotheses regarding trends, consumers' behaviors. Some of them I see as being transitory, whereas others they might become permanent without mitigating other trends, where we emphasize the idea that our core business is comfort, and basic comfort is encompassing a different understanding and perspective by the consumers. And now we see synergy and part of our trends. They are fully aligned, and we see synergy to those permanent new ideas. And that should be the main goal of our brands managing, not just the main brand, but also our co-brands, to guarantee to our brand portfolio a constant synergy. We keep investing on teams, tools, and effective agendas to guarantee the product sovereignty to be able to produce as much as possible our smart choice, combining style, origin, fair price. We also have to understand that the consumers, they are entitled to some trade-offs. So let's be alert to that, because that value equation will be slightly refined, and we are quite well positioned in that sense as we work with those magazines and specialized shops. We are trying also to consider a new experience, which will be much more digital for B2B and or B2C, with more content generation with shops, with a shopping experience facility with no friction or attrition at all. And last but not least important, what used to be a nominal channel before, now we consolidate and maximize the idea of anywhere e-commerce, where we have a broader digitalization, and also to overcome some of the final barriers between online and offline scope. And also to give a new meaning to different roles. We have partners who intermediate in our business, but our main lever in our business is that active life idea. And more currently, we are questioning this sort of model. How can we guarantee higher efficiency and agility? And we understand that should not be done throughout intermediates, but through this agility, efficiency, and urgency. And that's exactly what we are doing, and get prepared for that purpose. The sky is the limit. Once we talk about e-commerce or online, we are talking about digitalization with right partners, proper engaged stakeholders to be able to improve our contact and point of sales with our consumers throughout a comprehensive plug and play network. I mean, the time that I would take to become a partner and to eventually be a partner from the Hering system, that should be done in a very agile and seamless way, as I said before. And now to conclude, I'd like to share with all of you what has been part of our reflection mode in three different phases, which they do not have any time gap, but it's important to establish different horizons ahead of us. Our starting point was a rather reactive agenda and quite defensive by nature, trying to protect people in safe environments, and a very contingency exercise to mitigate costs. And another perspective in understanding consumers' trends, to better understand this actual time, to be more agile in terms of brands, and to address the concept of stay home, to show that we are very sympathetic to everything that's going on, reinforcing our key categories, which is that essential consuming experience perspective in a more transitory way that has been highlighted during this quarantine and is still persistent.
We have reviewed contracts, optimized our spreadsheets for e-commerce. We understood it was the moment to speed up some of the channels. We developed partnerships with new key accounts. We understood that it was important to connect with essential activities, which were still going on in main centers. And it was a time also to test new channels, to challenge the old way of thinking, to work around new projects, work around new tools. Then we have a second moment in the reopening. We're going through that right now, I believe, at the same time. Under the people agenda, we have been doing a daily exercise to embrace those who are more vulnerable, trying to understand their pain so that we can react faster, so that they can catch up with the ones who are less vulnerable. So we're trying to be very sensitive to this difficult moment people are going through. At the same time, we've seen new protagonists, new leading roles in the team, and we need to recognize, acknowledge, and appreciate their position. From the financial standpoint, we have established committees and a command center, not only to work on a contingent manner, but to also work around an offensive agenda, where we'll prioritize investments so that we can capture opportunities, as it was mentioned before, on a gradual basis, so that we can redesign and adjust our operating model to be ready for the post-pandemic phase. Of course, it's going to be a gradual return to whatever normal it is, but we need to be ready to capture something more, the surplus value. We have been looking very closely at two consumer groups, and those the loyal clients, which have a higher frequency of purchase. How can we and fascinate them? How can we maintain their loyalty also in our e-commerce space? They are not normally digital natives, so we need a different approach to understand their behavior and then create ease of purchase, if I may, to those clients. And omnichannel clients have an exponential potential. They have twice as much frequency and half the time spent on the channels. So that's perfect. We have also focused on our core business, both to capture this new behavior towards basic products, core products, transitory as that may be, but that's also because that's what we do best. That's where we deliver best. We have a better value equation and where we are more efficient operationally. We are becoming increasingly digital, not only from the store door out, but also from the store door in. We have been generating contact, which is quite in line with the current context, and we are revisiting brand portfolios and also, as I said, testing new channels, new portfolios. It has been an adaptation exercise for all of us, of course, driven by macroeconomic pressures, foreign exchange pressures as well. We have also worked on regional differences across the country. And from the logistics standpoint, we also need to revisit our pillars. We need to take our logistics to the 21st century, speeding up our digitalization agenda to be able to reap all the benefits in full. As for sales and operations, we have also been adapting operational models for those stores which are open, not only to ensure their financial health, but also their hygienic conditions and health conditions there, to be able to capture higher productivity given such a volatile scenario. We are now expanding our direct-to-consumer formats. In those pilot and tests, we have been controlling sell-out price, and we're capturing the most of the revenue for that. And we're starting to experiment revenue-shared models. That's a seed for us to look forward to revisit the role played by intermediaries in this business. And closing, we need to definitely accelerate the use of data science in our decision-making process. We are doing well in some areas, but we still have some ground to cover in other areas. We need to look at the company as a whole, across all units. So we have been doing multidisciplinary exercises across the company, trying to identify people who can participate in more than one project, wear more than one hat, if you will. On the financial front, we need to focus on creating value in the long run, and companies will be pressured for that agenda. We need to have a lot of clarity, a lot of science involved to be able to balance those two ends. As I said, we are trying to understand and revisit the journey, not only the purchase journey for the final consumer, but also for our client consumer, our B2B consumer or client. Human nature is such that there's a lot of similarities there, and this empathy analysis has been done on a daily basis so that we can understand things from the efficiency standpoint, but also from the loyalty, from the enchantment, if you will, standpoint. As for brands, we have been working around increasing the product matrix, always with an eye at the basic, at comfort, and with an eye at the value equation I mentioned before. And we know that good opportunities might emerge now. As Rafael said, we discontinued our PUC brand, PUC, and we'll be ready to answer questions about that after the presentation. It's not a downsizing movement, far from it. The agenda here is quite positive in terms of reassessing what we're doing, right? Reassessing our brands. The idea is to have active brands in our portfolio that might be able to translate a good value proposition in line with the new behaviors, the new consumption habits going forward. We're also expanding the long tail of e-commerce, as I mentioned, creating a higher availability of products, of offers. And a key point here to be highlighted is the following. We call it end-to-end digitalization. Several efforts were made from the counter out with CRM, with the in-store purchase experience, and so on. But we are still lagging behind in terms of working around that from the counter back, having a smarter supply chain, a plan to market, which is shorter, digitizing our product lines. In other words, to have fewer barriers. That takes a different mindset. And so all stakeholders need to be engaged in that. Our product team will improve on that front in terms of strengthening that agenda. We have a challenge because of our legacy systems, but for what we've seen in the past few weeks, we can quickly overcome those barriers and speed up our digitalization process in the what I have called from the counter in. In terms of macroeconomic issues, there is a limit. Our sourcing matrix is 80-20 towards national. There are some product lines which have no equivalent in the national domestic market, but some programs might be nationalized, and that is already underway. So we are revisiting our purchase of imported goods at this time. And what we see is a strong presence in digital. This anywhere commerce environment will increase or intensify our sales force with new tools, new resources, and we'll have a better control over the sellout front for the company. I close the presentation now, and we'll remain available along with Fabio, Thiago, and Rafael for questions and comments that you may have. Thank you. We'll now start the Q&A session. If you have a question, please press star one. To remove your question from the list, please press star two. It should be reminded this conference call is exclusive to market investors and analysts. We request that journalists' questions are sent to Ms. Ana Cláudia Câmara from the Press Relations Office at the following phone number: 11-3846-5787, or through the following email address: anacláudia.câmara@approach.com.br. Our first question comes from Helena Villares from Itaú. Hello, everyone. Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. We have two questions. Number one, in line with what we just said about the new normal, vis-a-vis the new collections, you have mentioned a few initiatives or conversion you were working on, but if you could give us some more color on how those collection launches will be played out in terms of timelines, more collections, fewer collections. We'd like to understand the following. Since consumers are going through several changes, maybe or most likely fashion will be affected in a faster manner as well. So how are you keeping up with that? We know that Hering is a brand focused on basic items, but you might feel some effect of that as well. Also, you mentioned some initiatives relative to new sales channels. So you already have initiatives to start distributing the Hering brand effectively. But question, how do you see the franchise and multi-brand channels? What are the financial health of those clients? And if you have some clients closing doors and leaving the market, would you say those new channels might start having a higher penetration in the respective regions and capturing some of those lost clients, quote unquote? Thank you. Hello, Anna. In answer to your question about collections and product cycle, it's important to mention an important change in our go-to-market approach. We adapted our winter collection cycle, we canceled our spring collection, and we should be launching our high summer collection a month in advance. That was the first change. As to the go-to-market, instead of doing what we would typically do, a showroom event where a purchase decision is taken through a longer period, 4 months, we'll be having monthly events or digital conducted, but with a very strong transference of content and know-how, but virtually, and then the delivery of new items will be fresher and hopefully addressing behaviors and expectations that will be assessed on a weekly basis, right? Of course, everything which is at the base of the pyramid, basic products and proven bestsellers are addressed at from a different standpoint. And that will happen on a weekly basis, and we react also on a weekly basis to that. But even at the top of the pyramid, we'll have a much more reactive model than we did before this situation, right? We'll be breaking down the events so that we can react in a more timely manner with a shorter time to market, and then we'll be able to better understand that new behavior and we'll be able to capture a higher value of the sellout front. As to penetration and the sustainability of those networks, franchises, and multi-brand, we did a great job, I have to say. We ensured a very frequent weekly communication channel with all those clients. And as Rafael said, we provided a clear communication channels of what was going on. As small and mid-sized business people have a different timing, with a few exceptions. So early on, we worked together with them to guide them through this, to guide them as they took new measures to control costs and so on, so that they would remain liquid throughout the period with delaying the payment of invoices, work with banks to raise new credit lines, and so on. After that, we tried to engage them, as I mentioned. We encouraged them to use those new tools to capture short-term revenue from a different channel. And we have been taking, you know, those weekly snapshots of how the networks are working. So even within different channels, the franchise and multi-channel, the segmentation will become more important because we'll have financial health, management capacity, potential going forward. So different segments need to be assessed in a more fragmented way for us to have a clearer picture of how things are. And of course, some small cities are working close to normal, big centers are not, so we need to address all of that as well. So, but the bottom line idea is to ensure the sustainability of the networks, and those weekly assessments have shown us that discontinuity is an exception, not the rule. Few clients have discontinued their operations. Of course, with exception of Pookie, which was a brand which was discontinued by the company. But otherwise, discontinuations have not been the rule. We've seen that the network has reacted quickly, has managed to somewhat defend their positions. Of course, it's a difficult scenario, difficult to make projections, but we are quite confident that we are being able to preserve the network. And we have been looking at opportunities as well, especially for multi-brand. Even though we have a smaller market, we see that the competition scenario might change radically. And then a strong, robust company with good agenda might reap a good opportunity even in a smaller, more impacted market. We've seen some competitors also reacting well through that channel. Thank you. Thank you. The next question comes from Olivia Petronilho from JP Morgan. Hello, everyone. Good morning for taking my question. I have a few questions. The first one, looking at the second quarter, it's a difficult quarter, but I'd like to understand, first of all, as to stores which are reopening, how are they faring? So they are now having rent or lease expenses and so on. How are they behaving, those which are reopening now? And also the selling performance. What can you tell us about that? You have more stores open, and what do you expect in terms of selling for the second quarter? And then a question about the Pook brand, the discontinuation of the Pook brand. What kind of schedule are you thinking about? Are we going to be changing brands? And also, as to the inventory level for the network. I'd like to understand a little more what kind of expectations you have. Are we going to have some promotions? What kind of inventory level are we talking about for stores? Thank you. Well, Olivia, as to stores productivity, those which are open now in May, in the month of May, overall, we've seen something like 60 to 70% of our historic basis, and that number is gradually going up week after week. We see an uptrend. For example, last week, where we had better weather, that of course helps because consumers felt more assured to go out and buy. But of course, we saw a drop in non-essential items, impulse purchases, of course, dropped. But in our basic essential categories, we've seen good numbers. Markedly, street stores in the countryside of the country have seen better sales than the average sales. So we have two clear outliers, shopping malls in big cities. And on the other end, the other outlier would be street stores working in smaller areas, smaller cities of the country with a very positive performance. And we've been trying to understand the best way to operate in terms of good practices, health measures. As it was said, customer flow is not the main revenue generator now. But it's worth mentioning that we are paying close attention to the financial model, to our profit and loss statement, trying to adapt personnel cost. We have been going forward in a positive manner in our negotiations with shopping mall groups, trying to renegotiate lease values. We've been seeing positive signs on that front. Not for all stores, but for most stores, we see a higher likelihood that once productivity resumes growth, and working with a lower expense space, we will see most stores being able to operate in a very prosper manner. As to the bookie question, we have tried to rethink, revisit the bookie brand, and we understand that children's market is one of the smallest potential market that we have, and that is a market that would suffer more when we conduct our surveys for customer behavior, including mothers. So trying to find new ways to reduce consumption for kids. It's a small market overall, and we have new behavior trends. And as we have other categories which are more assertive, we conducted several financial modelings, and bookie, in a scenario where it would be closing some 20 franchisee stores, especially in a market where we have an excess number of brands in a reduced market, we understood that it would be possible to capture that revenue in a different way, right? So that's why we revisited, and we understood it made sense, financially speaking, to discontinue the brand. That would be the best way to address that market. So we should see Hering Kids taking over some of that market. We have higher penetration there. We can complement Hering Kids portfolio, and we have 35% of booked clients who were already buying from Hering Kids. So as we pass the baton from one brand to the other, we do not expect major difficulties. We'll be testing new formats in our own stores for businesses we need to test with this new value proposition, including comfort and well-being. And as to franchises, we have four or five defined conversions to lighter formats, such as Hering Kids and Basic Shops. And the other part of that network will probably be closed. We are working around this in the most transparent way. We're trying to find alternatives for those business partners, which will be actually subsidized by the company to some extent. And the agenda so far has been quite positive and quite rational, if I may. As for the inventory question, the suspension of the portfolio and the non-reallocation for the winter collection in March create, of course, an inventory scenario which is more balanced in the network. What we have been trying to do is to do an exercise of weekly replenishing of bestsellers and essential products. So for now, sweatshirts and other winter key categories, but that's it. It's what we call an initial mix of products. And as for the autumn fashion inventory, we have made some cuts in line with the cuts we've observed in the market for competitors. We have inventory related to previous collections before winter and autumn, 78% below last year. In other words, it removes the pressure from a higher markdown for those older collections. As for fall and winter collections, clearly there will be some inventory pressure, But it is important to emphasize that a good part of the products which were still being manufactured when we stopped production in March and April, they were redirected to more long-lasting products or even to summer products. So in an attempt to remove the obsolescence of the products. So right now, in terms of trying to understand this curve as we reopen the main centers, the main cities, and how we reestablish the flow of products for stores. But I understand that all the necessary measures were taken and our overall inventory situation for summer is a source of concern, of course, because of the uncertainty levels in the market, but we are still in the belief that we have it under control. As I said, we have redirected some of those products that in terms of so that it will remove some of that pressure. We have put together a plan to increase markdown, but when we conduct the first simulations, our markdown trend is quite balanced.
That's perfect. Very clear, and thank you very much. Next question from Tobias Stingeli, Citibank.
Good afternoon, Fabio, Thiago, Rafael. I hope you are all healthy and safe.
You mentioned potentials that you would be taking a look at some stores, and Thiago said that have some new stores, this will be more an exception than a rule. How many stores would the company feel like running? Second, do you have any provisions for the month? And what is the level? Would you say that this rate is accordingly? You are trying to be a bit more conservative, and the line of clients is evolving in a different direction. And now, how about expenditures? You were able to react quite fast, but still, there is a number of measures that will have to be understood as they might be long-lasting. Could you elaborate a little bit more about expenses?
Hello, Tobias. This is Rafael. Good afternoon.
The potential for expenditures. Approximately 20% of all our expenditures, they come from sales. So if we have slow sales, we will have different percentages here. We are being quite strict in our agenda in terms of reduction and considering all the contingents, we are trying to reduce all companies' expenses. And once we remove those expenses variables, and once we do something different in 80% of our business, 40% of all those expenses, they are related to people, to personnel. In addition to execute salary reductions to different levels, those that are in the board or that are advisors of the company, they had a 40% reduction in their salary. And thanks to that, we managed to achieve a quite significant overall reduction. Some other adjustments in our framework will be necessary. We will have a different planning for stores in addition to frozen any additional new future agreement or contracts. Another significant package that we are trying to execute as part of our cost structure, they have to do with our loans, our marketing expenses, and rents. We have to cover all the building rents.
So we have been trying to renegotiate our shop rents with the main shopping center chains, and we have to consider that store by store, case by case, as we have stores at different shopping centers. And we are achieving reductions around 60 to 7% in terms of rents. And for marketing actions, we are optimizing our investments and we are taking them towards our digital channels, in addition to a number of other reductions of physical showrooms, which somehow they represent some savings to the company. Any other company's expenditures, they are being prioritized strongly, and we try to offset them as much as we can. Now, if I got your second question properly, yes, exactly. I want to know about the point of sales, and we are closely monitoring our receivables and collections rate. We have designed a refinancing plan, which sounds to be quite interesting, where we used to activate it once a delinquency was executed. That was for franchises and multi-brands. Besides, we are going after different alternatives, different billing alternatives, and we have some strong campaigns towards that with positive outcomes. Part of our cash flow has been balanced, and consequently, we can see a proper alignment in terms of billing. And to put that into numbers, our delay rate in face of receivables is around 15%. Such a index increased in 20% during the month of May, but we are considering each negotiation case by case. A certain aging of our portfolio may demand a different level of provisions. We feel so far some sort of pressure, but we can manage it. Everything is according what we expected for this time. That's perfect. Thank you. We have one last question yet, if you would like to assume. I think everybody lost the connection. Our next question, it's from Rubens Couto from Santander. I'd like to talk a little bit about the transformation agenda in terms of sales products. Are you considering to revise that model to maybe implement those significant changes in the e-commerce? Do you have any idea as how the company will deal with that relationship? Maybe looking after a different way to participate in the sellout. Could you elaborate a little bit about that and what you have been discussing with the network as a whole? This is Thiago speaking. Before answering Ruben's question, we had some interruption in the connection, so I will first answer part of Tobias' questions about franchise. We understand that the number will not of 10% on it is restricted to
We see operational geographic synergy. We are improving that sense to be able to regain our actions, but we are still very strong to expand our surface, considering the pilot project that I mentioned, and that pilot project has been very successful in our mega store. We understand that there will be new opportunities, and the concept of mega stores proved to be very effective and became a part of our relevant agenda, especially consider our current own stores base. Now, going to Ruben's questions, the franchise models. Let's go back to some of the issues I addressed during my presentation, such as redefine the role of intermediates. We would like to reinforce that this involvement is key to guarantee the continuity of our business. And for that, we keep a transparent and frequent communication, sharing decisions, and we try to guide them during contingency agency, and also once they are considering to take over the business again. And we see enhancement in this new process to give a new meaning to that project. And now I believe that franchise groups, they will act differently according to different groups, considering those larger regional groups that have a more omni-channel action. We may give a new meaning not only to stores that are in that scope, or maybe consider repositioning of some wholesale channels. We understand that to guarantee the financial health and the mental health of our large business partners, they may end up performing that multifunctional role, being responsible to generate higher revenue to the company and to themselves as well. Those smaller players, although they are very close working to their counters, as they have this sort of characteristics, I guess we can support them in the allocation model, products, purchase. We have been very directive for the past year, improving somehow assertivity in allocating products, indicators management, refurbishment. Well, that will be for small players, but overall we have to mitigate inventories of our partners, and the idea is to implement pilots where there is a priority to advocate for these topics, but we will guarantee with more frequency, more tools and data, a 100% management done by the company once there is a product allocation, mitigating any inherent inventory risks and improving ROI of operations. And for those smaller franchises, the idea is to emphasize what they do the best, which is yield, and to be working closer to their counter. That's great, Tiago. And this pilot project for smaller players, is that already ongoing? Oh, formats and hypotheses are due to be tested this year. And we do understand that there is even a context which justifies the acceleration of all these pilot projects where we will involve different stakeholders. So for high summer and after the winter season, we hope to have all these pilot projects implemented and being adopted as a pilot
attempt in a short run and maybe turn that into real projects in the middle to long run. Thank you. Our next question is from Andrew Rubens from Morgan Stanley.
Hi, thank you for taking the question and for a very helpful call. I was just curious on e-commerce, which of the channels have been most impactful? You mentioned selling through marketplace, your own website, the dark stores. So could you just say which have been the highest growth and the most impactful for overall sales? Thank you.
I believe that all initiatives that were mentioned here are possible to be conducted, but I would like to emphasize clients' base. I had mentioned how much an omni-channel customer has in terms of frequency, and they buy more than those customers from the omni-channel. Also, we see better performance indicators from our e-commerce website, where there is a greater cash and equivalence, and I would say mainly a new customer's base in the omni-channel, and maybe from the website marketplace, we see a huge potential which has not been yet captured. So I believe that agenda will be quite fast in the coming weeks. And we see that as part of our e-commerce revenue conclusion. So we see an opportunity there. But for the time being, I would say new customer bases and to improve e-commerce channel. These two issues were responsible to increase our e-commerce level.
Great, very helpful. Thank you again.
Ajudou muito. Muitíssimo obrigada. Good afternoon to the whole team. I have two additional questions. I apologize, but I'd like to address once again e-commerce and how are you managing the web commerce process with your franchisee? And by that, I mean via incentive models, commissions, and if you are considering the current model or not, and if there are any additional changes on the way. My second question has to do with processes. I think Thiago has mentioned that you still have some homework to do in the back end. And you also mentioned a little bit about logistics, but I'd like to know what is the level of integration, not only from a logistic perspective, but also how much do you believe you have a good visibility within the network or your own stores to be able to execute the shipment stores and all the alternatives of a omni channel. Thank you and good luck. This is Thiago speaking. The omni channel agenda has been quite successful, and customers' engagement are observed in the past 12 months once we integrated 100% of all our network in the omni-channel in the beginning, that the showroom used to be the main modality, and that does not seem to be a regular scenario. And little by little, other modalities, they increased their performance with a higher participation rate. Today, inventory is integrated in the CD, in the CB, or in our franchise stores with 500 VQs of qualified multi-brands, which will be part of our next wave. So we do not see that as any pain or any negative aspect, as we are able to make available all these combined modalities. And today is quite clear a value proposition and a business and different business rules to each one of the modalities, where the franchisee gets a share of that revenue for each one of them. We even included those new channels, including the voucher from the store of yore, where the customer gets a commission. I mean, the franchisee receives a commission. And within those three regular modalities, we have business rules with different revenue share drivers, but all of them guaranteeing the franchisee P&L, so that strength and joint effort is taken to a good ROI. We are also increasing our distribution to increase our express shipping, the super express shipping in the e-commerce with our franchisee centers, which became skilled for that sort of shipping, where we have around 200 stores that are really splitting that web shipping commerce, and they are working strongly in that production distribution hub. And any other stores, they are working with a lower level of assessment to this express shipping, but they are almost getting there. So I would say that we are walking towards a real omnichannel that will depend on a network engagement and logistics. Once I talk about solving some order issues, digitalization of products, improve some CPIs of the supply chain, from more concrete and structured actions. And I am pretty sure that our CFO will do his best to guarantee this investment and to have a good CapEx result. But from an omnichannel perspective, we are doing really well, quite advanced with moderated products and a very strong and increasing engagement by our network that is being compensated accordingly. And I believe that this new regional distribution centers approach is very interesting, because we understand that the same-day delivery represents a very important added value to our business. Thank you.
Thank you, Thiago. If I could make a follow-up, would you consider any specific moment where you could increase that activity and the presence between the networks in real time for the inventories? I mean, thank you.
The project was in our investments roadmap for the year. We had anticipated for the first half a pilot run, including a smaller number of stores. That project was delayed. We had social distancing rules to be implemented, but we expect to resume that in the second half of the year, again, as a pilot program. There are important adjustments to be made to our operating model, our inventory reserve, and we are addressing all that. It is an agenda to go through a pilot run first in 2020 to be implemented only later on, taking into account costs and other issues as we put together a business case. But it is a must for the company to better manage inventory levels. So we expect to be implementing that by 2021. 2020 remains as a pilot year. But again, it is in our roadmap and should be reactivated, as it will, in the first half of the year. This is Rafael speaking, just to reinforce the fact that we have several participants with us in our earnings call through the web. And throughout the presentation, we try to address all comments and questions we received also via the webcast. And just to reinforce that if a comment or question was not addressed, our IR team remains available to address whatever issue remains outstanding, okay? We now close Company Earnings conference call. Thank you all for participating and have a nice day, everyone. Thank you.